This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Venga por mí!
Last night, on the order of the President of the United States,
aquí lo esperan, Miraflores!
And in support of a request from the Department of Justice,
no se tarde en llegar!
United States military conducted an apprehension mission in Caracas, Venezuela, to bring to justice two indicted persons, Nicolas and Cecilia Maduro.
Cobarde!
Nicolas Maduro had his chance until he didn't. He effed around and he found out.
This was one of the most stunning, effective, and powerful displays of American military might and competence in American history.
Like, I don't understand yet how they haven't figured this out. And now, if you don't know, now you know. Because this is the way it's going to play out. And I think people need to understand that this is not a president that just talks and does letters and press conferences. And, you know, if he says he's serious about something, he means it. But don't play games. Don't play games with this president's in office, because it's not going to turn out well.
That was awesome. And I'll tell you what, we're going to get to the cautionary part of this whole Venezuelan experiment we're going into right now. I will get to that here in a couple moments. But let's just acknowledge and accept something here as red-blooded Americans, if you are an American, or just lovers of freedom. That's an amazing military accomplishment to leave way, way, way far from your home, infiltrate a foreign country that knows you're there, and snatch not just some nobody off the street corner, snatch the guarded president and his wife, who are surrounded by private security, from their compound and leave without a single death of ours. And look, we, you and I, we get to see the highlights, don't we? We get to see, but football, it's football season. On Sunday, we tune in, if you watch NFL, which actually I don't anymore, but you tune in and you see the passes and the blocking and the tackling and the running. And that's what you and I get to see. But the truth is that everything you see on the field on Sunday took so much preparation behind the scenes. Hours in the weight room and practice and film, but that's stuff that you won't ever see and then I won't ever see. We got to celebrate and cheer. Maybe you're still celebrating and cheering the snatching up of that commie dirtball Maduro. But rest assured, this was extremely complicated. It took a very long time to prepare. He was raising Cain.
This operation, known as Operation Absolute Resolve, was discreet, precise, and conducted during the darkest hours of January 2nd, and was the culmination of months of planning and rehearsal. An extraction so precise, it involved more than 150 aircraft launching across the Western Hemisphere in close coordination, all coming together in time and place to layer effects for a single purpose, to get an interdiction force into downtown Caracas while maintaining the element of tactical surprise. Let me talk a little bit about the preparation. After months of work by our intelligence teammates to find Maduro and understand how he moved, where he lived, where he traveled, what he ate, what he wore, what were his pets, in early December, our force was set pending a series of aligned events. The force included F-22s, F-35s, F-18s, EA-18s, E-2s, B-1 bombers, and other support aircraft, as well as numerous remotely piloted drones. As the force began to approach Caracas, the joint air component began dismantling and disabling the air defense systems in Venezuela, employing weapons to ensure the safe passage of the helicopters into the target area. We arrived at Maduro's compound at 1:01 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, or 2:01 a.m. Caracas local time, and the apprehension force descended into Maduro's compound and moved with speed, precision, and discipline towards their objective and isolated the area to ensure the safety and security of the ground force while apprehending the indicted persons. On arrival into the target area, the helicopters came under fire, and they replied with that fire with overwhelming force in self-defense. One of our aircraft was hit but remained flyable, and as the president said earlier today, all of our aircraft came home. Maduro and his wife, both indicted, gave up and were taken into custody by the Department of Justice, assisted by our incredible U.S. military with professionalism and precision, with no loss of U.S. life.
That's awesome. That's awesome. If you are a red-blooded American, you have to admit that's awesome. Now, let's get beyond the geek-out action movie stuff. So impressive. All the credit in the world to all the people who were involved in pulling this off. Why? What's the why? I know we hear a lot about drugs. It's about fentanyl. It's about fentanyl. Definitely drugs and drugs and drug boats and stuff like that. Look, I'm sure that's part of it. But President Trump touched on something. He touched on a bit of the why. It's way beyond drugs. Here he was.
And the Monroe Doctrine is a big deal, but we've superseded it by a lot, by a real lot. They now call it the Donroe Document. I don't know. It's Monroe Doctrine. We sort of forgot about it. It was very important, but we forgot about it. We don't forget about it anymore. Under our new national security strategy, American dominance in the Western Hemisphere will never be questioned again. Won't happen.
Monroe Doctrine, Western Hemisphere. What is all this stuff? Let's just do a little Monroe Doctrine 101. James Monroe used to be president in the 1800s. Don't worry about the details of it. But remember, the founders of this country were emphatic that we stay out of Europe's business. And they even said why. They're always in some war. They're always fighting with each other. We don't need to get involved. We'll trade with everybody. We don't want to get involved. That is what the founders wanted. They did not want to get involved. However, they understood that proximity matters. And Europe can do what it's doing. That's fine. But we're not going to allow hostile nations right by us. We're not going to allow hostile nations, they were worried about Europe at the time, but any hostile nations to set up shop right next to us to harass us. You want to do that in your part of the world? You have a good time. You don't get to do it next door to us. That is the most basic 101 version of what the Monroe Doctrine is. And that, if let's say you're running Cuba, let's say you're running Colombia, that whole Monroe Doctrine thing should probably worry you.
Cuba is ready to fall, you know?
Yes.
Cuba looks like it's ready to fall. I don't know if they're going to hold out.
By the way, you have to do something with Mexico. Mexico has to get their act together because they're pouring through Mexico, and we're going to have to do something. We'd love Mexico to do it. They're capable of doing it. But unfortunately, the cartels are very strong in Mexico.
Very simple.
Mr. President, Colombian President Gustavo Petro, a couple weeks ago, he said he's got to watch his ass. And today, he said he's not concerned about anything happening to him in the aftermath of this operation. So just what your message is
about
that?
Well, he has cocaine mills. He has factories where he makes cocaine. And yeah, I think I stick by my first statement. He's making cocaine. They're sending it into the United States. So he does have to watch his ass.
Now those leaders of those countries know what that means. The United States of America is realigning its foreign policy back to being closer to what it was at the founding of our country. That foreign policy is your business elsewhere, thousands and thousands of miles away, is your business. If you think you're going to bring your bad business and park it right next to us, there's going to be a problem. So We shall see what the next 3 years bring. Now, for the cautionary part of it, Donald Trump said, remember, Venezuela's leadership is gone. Their VP is in Russia. Their president is in federal custody in New York City. So who's running Venezuela? We are.
We're going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious transition. So we don't want to be involved with having somebody else get in, and we have the same situation that we had for the last long period of years. So we are going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious transition. And it has to be judicious, because that's what we're all about.
Right. That's fine. Sounds good. I'm not yelling or screaming, but now's the hard part. It's not that the military part was easy. Don't get me wrong, obviously. All the bravery, all the planning, all the everything. Now, though, taking a country that has completely lost its way and establishing some form of government there that the people will accept and B, is friendly with us, this is going to be a difficult part, and this part might get ugly. There are going to be some bumps in the road, I guarantee you. Let's pray for a good outcome. My personal belief is that we should simply colonize Venezuela and make it an American colony. I know that that's not going to land well with the rest of the world or really anybody in the political establishment, but I'm a huge fan of colonization, and Venezuela should simply be ours. That won't happen. We'll see where we go from here. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. I love my cell phone company. I am so big on hiring Americans. As we wake up every single day and we look at the news and we find out about this corporation fired 1,000 Americans, hired 1,000 foreigners. This corporation gets busted for having all these illegals. I have grown more and more aware as I age about companies that prioritize hiring Americans. American jobs for Americans. That's what PureTalk does. When you make the switch to PureTalk, when you switch from Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, when you get a hold of someone on the phone at Pure Talk, it's almost striking how pleasant they are and how they speak English. They understand it. You know why? Because they're Americans right here in America. Pure Talk makes it a priority to keep American jobs in America, and I love that. Make the switch. Save some money. Prioritize America. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. All right, so there was a news story yesterday about Hilton Hotels. In case you didn't know, let me catch you up on it. DHS, the DHS official account on social media, showed an email from Hilton Hotels. An email saying that DHS ICE had essentially booked a bunch of rooms at a hotel in Minnesota, and there was a Hilton Hotels email saying, sorry, ICE isn't welcome here. And that, of course, prompted some people on our side to get angry, myself included. It prompted journalists like Nick Sorter, who does outstanding work, to go dig into the truth of all that. And Nick did, and here he was.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Good. Do you have any rooms for tonight?
We should, yeah.
Okay. Like, how many? Could we get, like, 10? I know that might be.
What agency is it for? Using the
well,
government.
They'd be Department of Homeland Security.
So we're not accepting people from immigration, ICE agents, DHS into our property. It's just our management ownership.
Oh, okay, yeah. I thought that changed today. Was that?
I just talked to my the owner of the building, uh-huh. And. He didn't say there has been any changes. So
really? Okay.
Yeah, okay. It's just policy, you know.
Yeah, I mean that's not your fault. Totally, yeah. Totally get that. So they actually said that was like, I mean honestly, this is the most convenient location. So
right.
It's like, so they told you no, that there's no
immigration.
Now, what should have happened from there, and what was happening, very proud of you, by the way, is Hilton Hotels should get the Bud Light treatment, should feel the fire of a thousand suns. And I don't know if you noticed, while the stock market did very well yesterday, Hilton Hotels did not. Immediately, the right, no longer content to do the, well, we can't be like them thing, the right said, no, I'm canceling my reservations. I had to book three rooms for three or four nights next month. We have to travel for work, me and the whole team. And I was about to book a Hilton, one of the Hilton subsidiaries, because it was right across the street from where we're going. Psh, booked it somewhere else. I think we booked the Best Western or something like that. So me too. I did the exact same thing. However, I need to throw a little addendum on here, an important little addendum. Hilton Hotels came out today and did the right thing. Hilton Hotels came out today and said, this is not our policy. This is an independent hotel. They have violated our policy. They violated our trust. And we have removed this hotel from the Hilton Hotels family. So an independent hotel under the Hilton umbrella did something sick and demonic because they're communists. Hilton Hotels, after feeling your heat, did the right thing, put out a statement, this is not us, they are gone, that's a scalp, and we did good. It was going to be an outrage story until this morning when Hilton Hotels came out and did the right thing, but really, this is a wonderful story. This is a wonderful story that the right, it's changing its mentality. No more this live and let live filth. We have to be aggressive. Good work to you. All right? Let me lay this out for you. 3 months. 90 days. What if in 3 months you could have great energy all day long? Not just in the morning after a good night's sleep. I'm talking after lunch too, when you want to take a nap. What if you just felt good? At work all the time, you're not staring at the clock. I can't wait to get a... What if you just felt good all day long? I'm telling you right now, a chalk male vitality stack or female vitality stack is life-changing. Natural herbal supplements. It's been 4 years I've been taking them, one every single day. It has changed my life. I'm better at work. I'm better at home. On the weekends, I don't want to lay around. It's just so nice. And to do it without needles in your arm or pills or something, try it. 90 days is all I'm asking. Try it. Chuck.com/JesseTV. All right, so we're about to take something that's extremely sad and make it political for a second, and I feel gross doing that. First of all, prayers for Congressman Doug LaMalfa. He died unexpectedly this week, and it's extremely sad. Prayers for his family. We also have Congressman Jim Baird, got in a really bad car wreck. Now, obviously, beyond the prayers for the families of these two gentlemen, we do have to discuss something that's uncomfortable. And obviously, their lives are more important than what we're about to discuss. But we have a GOP majority that is thin. We're talking supermodel in the 80s thin. That's a problem. Joining me now, Katie Zachariah, legal and political strategist. All right, Katie. Obviously, we don't want to make untimely deaths and car accidents political things, of course. But it is getting slimmer there in the House, and that's not good.
It's something that President Trump absolutely crushed yesterday in his speech. He said, if we lose the 26 midterms, I will be impeached, or they will at least do everything they can to attempt an impeachment, a full impeachment. And the passing of LaMalfa out here in California is tragic. He's been a very faithful Republican, one of the few we've had out of California, truly. But his district, California 1, was already in cahoots with Prop 50. So because this was ahead of the filing deadline in California, there will have to be a special election before the Prop 50 map is instituted. And so this is Gallagher's district. This is another longtime Republican. It's a safe Republican seat right now. So in a special election, it'll likely get picked up by a Republican, but only temporarily. As long as Prop 50 goes through, this will then be a very solid blue district out here in California, which will then give the Democrats yet another seat in our razor thin majority, and we'll start taking away from that majority.
Katie, can you give those of us who aren't California people a heads up on this Prop 50? I know it's something we've discussed before, but is this kind of a done deal? It's going to go through, we're basically screwed and lose a bunch of seats, or is it still a coin flip thing?
Well, if we look at, so I'm going to go back to Texas for a second, because this was all Gavin Newsom reacting to what happened in Texas and the redrawing of the maps. However, Texas redrew those maps because the Biden DOJ sued them on their census. So they actually had to redraw these maps. And the Supreme Court sided with Texas, and they're able to use those new maps in the 26 midterm elections. And there is now a lawsuit on Prop 50 through the DOJ because of racial gerrymandering. And that's a delineation and a difference from the Texas map. So what happened with Prop 50 is Gavin Newsom essentially said, we're going to retaliate Texas redraw, banking on the uninformed electorate here in California, because they didn't know or weren't aware or didn't do the research that map redraw had to be done based on the DOJ suing, as I said earlier. And the Californians just went in, voted in Prop 50, which was actually unconstitutional in violation of three sections of our state constitution. It was mid-cycle redistricting and upended the independent redistricting commission that we had voted in earlier. However, we did it anyway, not we, I, but Californians did it anyway. And now it stands with a DOJ challenge because there is clear evidence that said they racial gerrymandered at least one district, basically saying that we are doing this to benefit, you know, Latino voters in this one district. And so they've challenged the entirety of Prop 50, whether or not just that district alone is challenged or the Supreme Court wipes out all of Prop 50, I'm not sure. But it does have, we do have a challenge to it. What happens to it, I'm not sure.
Katie, Donald Trump was, as you mentioned, he gave a speech yesterday, it was outstanding, but he talked about things like healthcare. He talked about things like voter ID. We have to pass this, we have to pass that. And he's, of course, correct about all these things, but having to do something and having the power to do something are two different things. We have a bunch of loser Republicans in the House and the Senate, not all of them, but a bunch of them, enough of them to screw these things up. Can we even pass something as basic as voter ID with weapons-grade dorks in the Senate?
Jesse, you nail on the head. I was reading a report that said we've passed less legislation, the Republicans. Our slim majority of Republicans have passed less since 1989 than any other administration. While we have this narrow window with the president just, you know, basically obliterating everyone in his path by getting stuff done on behalf of the American people, we have this House that is lackadaisically just barely passing basic. I mean, yes, they passed the one big beautiful bill, but what else have they done? So President Trump said, and I sound like a broken record, but it's the only thing that needs to be done in the Senate. The only thing. If they don't do anything else, this is what needs to be done. He said it should be renamed the Save America Act. But what sits right now in the Senate is the Save Act, which was sponsored by Mike Lee, Senator Mike Lee, and it is requires voter ID, proof of citizenship, in order to vote in federal elections. Now, this isn't upending statewide elections. This is strictly for presidential and congressional races. And President Trump is correct. As we turn the corner into this 250-year mark and the anniversary of our country, since 1776, if that Senate does not pass voter ID, we lose the republic. We might not lose it overnight, but if we are not regulating the fact that it has to be citizens that go vote in our elections, we will not be able to keep control of the republic. There is no greater piece of legislation. So what does Senator Thune have to do, Jesse? He has to get rid of the filibuster. And I know there is the back and forth of, okay, if we get rid of the filibuster, then they'll get rid of it on us and we don't want to do that. if the Democrats do not want to side with the Republicans and they cannot gain enough votes to pass that SAVE Act, then you have to nuke the filibuster, because there is no other piece of legislation that is more important for the United States than voter ID and proof of citizenship, as President Trump said yesterday.
Katie, Donald Trump said, among other things, that the Democrats are going to impeach him if they take the House in the midterms. I think everybody with an IQ above a frog knows that that is true. But explain this to me. Why should that concern me? It's not that I want him impeached, but he's been impeached twice. The Senate's not going to remove him. The House, as you've already mentioned several times, isn't passing legislation anyway. I know it's a pain. It's not ideal, but is this something I should lay awake at night staring at the ceiling in mortal fear about?
The Senate is much safer, as we've talked about. The House has that razor-thin majority. It's high likelihood that if we do not aggressively go after it, we lose the House, and then Hakeem Jeffries becomes Speaker, and yes, they impeach him, or they try to impeach him to the best of their abilities. Do you lay awake at night? What is problematic to me is it takes away from President Trump being able to get stuff done, and I use that word very liberally. He is going to be tied up by the House because they would rather, and we know this, we know that Hakeem Jeffries and the radical Dems in the House would rather tie President Trump's hands and feet in and try to impeach him than allow him to be successful for the American people, because then that will give them the chance at getting power again in 28. So it will essentially stonewall him from getting anything done, and then allow the Democrats to gain this momentum for the 28 presidential. And so I look at the 26 midterms, and people, we can debate on this, but I look at the 26 midterms as an on-ramp or off-ramp for the 28 presidential. If we are able to keep the House and continue delivering for the American people, look at what President Trump just did today. He's banning corporations, large corporations, from being able to do home purchases. This is basic tenet of American prosperity, for Americans to then now be able to buy homes again because they're not competing with corporations. If the Democrats have him tied up in impeachment inquiries and impeachment processes, he's going to be distracted, and they know this, with having to fight them off and battle them off. So we want to keep the House so he can deliver us an entire 4 years of prosperity and not try to be get him stonewalled by the Democrats, Jesse.
Katie, Gavin Newsom, that slimy lizard person, is obviously running for president. He's been running for president for years. And he's still possibly, hopefully, catching heat about all this Palisades fire stuff where the money just seemed to disappear like a fart in the wind. Is this going to haunt him?
If we do a good job at reminding the American people of the failure of leadership, this isn't just incompetence. President Trump has been kind of generous to Gavin Newsom. This is criminal negligence. Our 117 million gallon reservoir in the Pacific Palisades sat empty, and the mayor of LA was in Ghana ahead of a 5-day warning of one of the biggest windstorms in California's history. And that happens almost, we get these Santa Ana winds every year. There was enough warning to get all of the right people and resources in place, and yet they sat idle. And so Gavin Newsom, and not only ahead of time, President Trump warned Gavin Newsom during the Paradise, California fires, if you don't fill your reservoirs, if you don't deforest, if you don't do brush clearance, you're going to have massive fires on, as your track record as California governor. And he didn't heed that warning in 2018. And then now we had the $250 billion worth of damage, the largest wildfire damage in U.S. history. And to date, not one single home, Jesse, not one single home has been rebuilt. This is a year ago today. They have done almost nothing. And he likes to say, he just said in an interview either yesterday or the day before, oh, we really did all of the debris clearance, okay? We had the FEMA clearing. We had the guard clearing everything. No, that is all federal government that cleared it. What he's responsible for and what Karen Bass is responsible for are issuing these permits, cutting the red tape, and ensuring that homeowners can get back to their homes. But 80% of the people that have been displaced don't even have approval to begin rebuilding. And it is just, it's criminal. And these homes all sit with for sale signs, Jesse, in the Palisades, all along Malibu, because the people cannot sit on a lot, pay their mortgage, pay their insurance, and not live there, and also pay rent in a home, and the insurance is such a scandal and scam that they are not covering a lot of this. So that is just one area. I mean, the fraud that's being uncovered, the homelessness, the welfare, you know, Ro Khanna alluded to $72 billion worth of fraud. I mean, I think it has to be at least double that once they start blowing this open, Jesse. And so Gavin Newsom should not accelerate. He should be wiped out like Tim Walz.
$72 billion in fraud. Katie, appreciate you. Come back soon. Yeah. Lee. I love chips. Everyone who knows me would describe me as not just being a robe guy, but a chip guy. I'm a chip freak. But that's a problem, you see, because I'm also 44 and I'm not 24 anymore, and chips generally are terrible for you. I've always been that guy. Gas station, grabbing some chips. Grocery store, grabbing some chips. Can't do that anymore. Have you read the ingredients? Have you read the ingredients on the back of your chip bag? It's horrifying. So what to do, what to do? I'm not giving up chips. I don't have to give up chips. I have Massa chips now. Massa chips. Chips I can eat guilt-free. Look at the back of a bag of Massa chips. No seed oil filth. It's tallow. It's corn. And they're fantastic. The crunch. They're so crunchy. Mm. You want a perfect snack? Bag of Massa chips. Little thing of hot sauce. Little dab on there. All you need. Go try them. MassaChips.com/JesseTV.
Today begins a new era. We will draw this city closer together. We will replace the frigidity of rugged individualism with the warmth of collectivism. I was elected as a democratic socialist, and I will govern as a democratic socialist. I will not abandon my principles for fear of being deemed radical.
That's not good. I just got back from New York City like a week ago, and I'll be honest with you, when we got back, we thought to ourselves, well, that might be it. That friggin' dirtball just got sworn in on the Koran. That's a great place to be. Joining me now, somebody who's probably about to suffer, is Lydia Moynihan, New York Post correspondent. Lydia, I hope you've already got some plans to move or something, because that city's about to go to crap.
I'm joining you live from the People's Republic of New York City. I'm here to stay. You know, I'm a little better armed. I have about 5 canisters of pepper spray, one in each coat. So it's baby steps, but for now, I think I have to be live on the ground doing some shoe leather reporting so you can see how horrible it is.
Lydia, when I say things like that, or when you say things like that, people are tempted to say, well, Bill de Blasio was a radical, right? He was a Sandinista. I mean, his parents were, but they say, well, New York's gone through this stuff before. I don't think people fully grasp that this guy is a true believer who's going to be so much worse than Bill de Blasio.
Yeah, and it's alarming. And there's actually a new poll that came out recently that said as many as 60% of New Yorkers now support socialism. So I also think we're looking at a demographic change that didn't exist under de Blasio. So we have way more people from third world countries, way more socialists here than ever before, who I think will be much more supportive of these policies. The other thing too is when de Blasio came in, there was so much impressive governance for so long. And I love this Adam Smith quote, there's a lot of ruin in a nation. And so it felt like New York was in a really good place and there was a lot of ruin in this city, because you'd had Giuliani, you'd had Bloomberg, people who were super efficient, technocrats who understood how to govern, how to keep people safe, how to keep business leaders happy. And so when de Blasio came in, things were already pretty good. And so he, you know, obviously took us down many notches, but we were already doing so well. Zoran Mamdani is coming in a moment where New York is already struggling. Obviously, the pandemic, people have fled. It's feels very unsafe. A lot of people, you know, just anecdotally, young women I speak with don't want to take the subway. It's more expensive. He's coming in at a time where I think his leadership could be perilous. And I guess there's two things that I have in my takeaways in his very short reign thus far. The first is alarming. Personnel is policy. And so the big question, obviously, when he won was, who is he going to put in place? You know, who's going to run schools? Who's going to run the police force? We have Jessica Tisch, who actually is a really smart and capable police commissioner. But the other people that he's appointing, the tenant czar, essentially, to advocate for tenants' rights, she, socialist and communist, doesn't even describe her. She thinks owning property is basically white privilege, and she wants to abolish that. The gentleman who he's appointed as school commissioner is all about equity. He wants to get rid of all of the gifted and talented school programs. So I'm looking at people that he's putting in place, and they are just as, if not more radical than Mamdani is. And so the more people that he puts who are aligned with him, the worse it is for the city. One thing that I actually, this was a hilarious viral moment over the weekend where Mamdani basically said that he'd called President Trump to register his opposition to bringing Maduro to New York. And it's just hilarious to think that anybody would care what he thinks, least of all President Trump. And of course, you had Jim Hines, who's the House ranking member on the Intelligence Committee, who's talking about how he hasn't talked to President Trump. He hasn't talked to anyone in the administration. But Mamdani is claiming that actually he has spoken to Trump and people in the administration. I'm skeptical. The reason I bring this up, though, is because what we've seen from Mamdani over the last year is an obsession with relevance and an obsession with being on the national stage. And so my theory, this is the best case scenario, is that Mamdani just likes making headlines, he likes being in the news, and that he just wants to basically stay as a national figure, make sure that he's sort of part of the zeitgeist, and that that's his motivation. So that's the best case scenario, is that he just really wants to be relevant, and he's going to post all these crazy things on Twitter and not actually govern. And of course, the reality is he's never had a job. He didn't show up to the majority of votes when he was in the council in New York State. So he is very feckless, and there is still a hope that maybe he just isn't going to be that good at actually implementing the radical policies that he has. That's the best case scenario. The worst case scenario is he has appointed some pretty terrifying people, and the city will go to hell in a handbasket.
What do you know? A communist leader who never had a job and is now going to destroy everything. And speaking of those feckless leaders, let's meet really quickly the new head of the New York Fire Department and also, I'm assuming, softball team.
Lillian Bonsignor is a career first responder. In just 9 days, she'll be running the world's busiest fire department, one of the most important appointments of the incoming administration. Although she never served as a firefighter, she's confident that won't matter.
I know the job. I know what the firefighters need, and I can translate that to this administration who's willing to listen. I know what EMS needs. I have been EMS for 30 plus years.
Bonsignor is a trailblazer for the LGBTQ community, who will serve as the FDNY's first openly gay commissioner. She's a highly respected, detail-oriented manager whose style has been compared to NYPD Commissioner Jessica Tisch, who will remain in her post in the new administration.
Lydia, I just hand it to you. It's your commissioner.
DEI is alive and well in New York. Look, we saw what happened in California when you prioritize identity politics over competence. And it was just a year ago that the Palisades were completely destroyed. People's lives have been completely decimated as a result of that. And I think my concern is that, again, it's not just that she is ill-equipped and unqualified, it's the ripple down effect. And so we in New York have, and as we know from 9/11, we have the bravest, the best, the smartest police officers and firemen. And the concern is when you have somebody who's running those organizations, I think Jessica Tisch is excellent at what she does, when you have an FDNY commissioner who's all about identity politics, that's going to have a massive trickle-down effect where people who otherwise would be motivated to work really hard are going to be like, this is the most poorly run organization. Why am I here? And so we're already seeing members of the police force, members of firemen leaving. And there's kind of, I think the force is going to get a bit hollowed out, because if you're a young person, you're going to just flee, go to Florida, go to Texas. There are actually a lot of other states that are actively recruiting NYPD people who are firemen in New York, because they know they're really smart and talented people and are probably looking for an exit opportunity. So people who are younger and still able to sort of flee are going to leave. And then you're going to see people on the sort of upper end, people who've served for quite some time, maybe they'll finish out their tenure, get their pension, and then they're going to leave. They're going to do private security for billionaires. This is sort of the trajectory for a lot of really great NYPD people, is they get their pension and then they also work full-time for a billionaire as a driver and security, because obviously there's going to be a lot more billionaires wanting to hire their own private security, because it doesn't seem like Mamdani is going to be supportive of the NYPD. And then you're going to see in the middle, there's going to be a lot of people who are stuck and can't leave. But this is the big concern, is that it doesn't even matter that Zoran Mamdani has backtracked and said actually he doesn't want to defund the police. This is about, in practice, people are going, even if he doesn't defund them, even if he keeps funding exactly the same, people are not going to want to serve under a man and under a mayor who has just called them racist and horrible things, who is not going to be supportive of the work that they need to do. And I mean, you look at what Alvin Bragg did to Daniel Penny. That's going to be happening tenfold. And as a police officer, I can't imagine wanting to ever get involved. They're just going to be sitting on the sidelines, and you know, even if they're still there, they're just going to be on their phone. They're not going to want to step in, because they're not going to have a mayor or a police commissioner, if Jessica Tisch leaves, who support them and who are their advocates.
Well, this is all pretty much terrible. Lydia, protect yourself, all right? Hopefully we talk to you again soon. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And I know we all get frustrated with politics from time to time. Obviously, I do as well. And we get frustrated with the Republican Party, especially when we have control. Why aren't you doing this and why aren't you doing that? All that stuff is legit. So I've found it to be healthy for me to at least take a moment every now and then and smell the roses and realize how bad it could have been. And the top of every ticket gets all the attention, right? The presidential nominee is going to get all the attention. The VP just gets a little. The VP's spouse gets almost none at all. But I want to look back really quickly. Now that Tim Walz is in the news, he's not running for governor, I just want to remind you that this woman right here, this woman was about to be in the White House a lot.
See you tomorrow.